Hey there, hope you're going well. I want to try something new with you. I want to share with you a little case study as an experiment, a different form of sharing what I'm up to and what I'm noticing, what I'm learning in the world of leadership and leadership development. This week, I finished a 12-month piece of work with a client and the results were really inspiring. And I thought it'd be worth sharing with you if you're interested in particular in how do you shift and mature a leadership team's approach and growing and becoming more adaptable and really more leaderful, I suppose. And I thought this is a really cool little story. So the organization that I was working with and the senior leadership team within the organization is a team that provides a really critical service to the rest of the organization as well as the wider customer base that it served. It's full of specialists and experts, and their work has weight. You know, if they get it wrong, their advice that they give, they're kind of an advisory team. If they get the advice wrong, it has significant consequences. And so consequently, the work sort of moved really slowly because there was this primary focus on getting things right and perfect. And all the decisions had to be reviewed by senior leadership before it was published. You know, they were really hands-on in the process. And of course, as a result of that, it made the team have a reputation for technical excellence. No question about that. But there was a shadow side to that. There's consequences. And consequences were the things moved incredibly slowly. You know, sometimes the piece of work would take a couple of years before the advice was given. You know, in this day and age, you know, that's unusual, right? Have something take a couple of years. But, you know, the work was important. So getting it right was important as well. But beyond just going slowly, the staff were becoming more disengaged because they were feeling disempowered because all of the technical work was really driven and controlled by senior leadership. And the staff were really kind of just there as sort of data crunchers and not really empowered to have a lot of autonomy to make decisions themselves. And so the churn was starting to grow and there was kind of a stagnation that was happening in the broader team. As well, though, beyond the internal challenges of going slow and disengaged staff, there was also a risk of this team becoming irrelevant as the world changes, the way in which this team needed to work. I was coming under pressure because their customers were finding other ways of getting the answers they needed. And it's a bit like a GP, right? You know, when we've got Google, and we can do a lot of self-diagnosis, and particularly in the world of AI now. And so, you know, the role of the GP is changing. And it's the same with these folks. They really needed to be continuing to up their game about how they added value. And there was a real pressure there for them to do that. So the big boss of the team, this whole function, was pretty frustrated and was looking for ways to help the leaders step up. And so I got to work with them, as I mentioned, over 12 months, and as a sort of team coach, a team facilitator, team coach to help these senior leaders really shift how they were leading to deliver value, to create engagement, and really just to keep evolving what their whole function was all about. So over 12 months, I want to talk you through the overall approach that they took that I helped them with. The first thing that we did was to define, well, what does great leadership need to look like and the shifts that were required. So some of the shifts were, you know, moving from as a senior leader being less of a technical expert and more of a people leader and strategic leader. And those key shifts were met with quite a bit of resistance because, as you can imagine, when you define your work as I'm a technical expert and suddenly that's not how you're expected to add value, that can be quite threatening. And there was quite a bit of pushback on that. Yet it stayed and that was the expectation and they signed up to that. We'll give it a go. But they were also empowered, though. It wasn't just the expectations were set. There was an explicit empowerment from the big boss to say, right, you've got permission to go and try this out and experiment. But empowerment by itself was also not enough. They needed to be equipped with the tools and support to help them to make these changes, both individually and collectively. And what we did is I did quite a bit of one-on-one coaching with each of them to help them find their own way to make those shifts. And they got given some useful tools. And one of them was a tool all around, how do you deliberately experiment? How do you deliberately try new things? Not just kind of give things a go, and if they don't work, then you move on. It's more like, all right, how do I design specifically experiments that I can learn from about how I change my behaviors, my way of working? And so that was really important. We also spent quite often some time together to review how we were tracking as a team, as well as how we were, what we were learning as well, and sharing those. And they were really powerful experiences as well. There was also in place a strong accountability framework. So regular one-on-ones with the big boss about how they were tracking, as well as some really visible data showing how the leaders were spending their time across, you know, how much technical work were they doing versus people leadership versus strategic activities. And that was a really useful ingredient in the whole thing. So this week, we got together for half a day as the team, and it was a bit of a how are we tracking conversation. And there were some significant shifts, and I would sum them up in sort of three sort of key ways. The first one was kind of their way of operating as leaders shifted from being perfectionists to being experimentalists. There was a real shift from kind of getting it right to trying something out to see what we could learn. And that was a really powerful mindset shift away from doing that, all of that work just to get it perfect, rather than making, you know, 80% right now could be okay. Let's try that out and see what happens. So there was a sense of progress rather than perfection going on. That was the first shift. The second one was moving from an identity as a leader, as someone who controls what happens, to someone who empowers what happens and enabling their team to do more of the decision-making and the review work, for example, as opposed to having everything having to come up to the top. And so that shift in identity from controller to empower was really powerful for them as well. The third shift is what I would define as risk aversion, moving from risk aversion to value creation. So the focus, if you like, the kind of the operating system through which they were making decisions was all about not so much how do we avoid risk, although that's still important, but more how do we add value here? Where's the way to add value in the best possible way? And that shift has really lifted everything because it's more of a, you know, it's a possibility focus rather than avoiding bad things from happening. So really, really key. So those three shifts, for shifting from perfectionist to experimentalist, from controller to empower, from risk aversion to value creation, I would sum them up in, and one of the team members, one of the leaders in the team summed it up as, it's about more purposeful action. So we're in action, but we're not on autopilot. We're purposeful, we're mindful, we're deliberate, we're asking different questions, you know. For example, from what might go wrong as a question to what might we learn when we experiment. And having that as a key driving question was really, really helpful. The takeout, I reckon, for all of us, and maybe for you as well, is when you are looking to create behavioral change, leadership behavioral change, I reckon there's a few key ingredients. I've got four written down here. Let me just talk you through them. So the first one is change requires heat. Change requires heat. You know, it's physics. If we want someone to change, we need to get a bit of heat going on. And the heat can come from external sources. And in this case, it might have been the big boss and their frustration, but also looking more broadly to go, hey, you know what? The market's changing. We need to evolve as well, or we may not be around. And by the way, there was about 30 years of history here with this team of doing it an old way. So the heat required, I wouldn't say it needed to be full on, but it needed to be constant for a while. And in this case, it was a 12-month journey with heat all the way. But it didn't have to be turned up to 10. It just needed to be on and present. And that was really key. You know, you can also have heat. You can be a self-disruptor, right? That's much rarer. I think self-disrupting. I think if we could be a bit more self-disrupting, all of us, then change would become easier. If we're okay with changing how we do things and looking for ways to do it, I think that is the sign of really strong leadership development capability. So number one, change requires heat. Number two, change requires support. You can't do this. It's really hard to do this by yourself. And in this case, support was definitely there from the big boss. She really cared about helping them change, and also engaging someone like me to provide some expertise, some framework, some space that was objective, non-judgmental, that could also equip them with some tools to help them make change. For example, that experiment framework that I mentioned earlier. Third one is change requires experiments. You've got to be in action. You can't just think your way through this. That change is getting about deliberate about what you are trying in action. It's that purposeful action I mentioned before. Experimenting deliberately and seeing what you can learn is a really, really key practice in creating any sort of change, I reckon. And fourth, change requires commitment to a bigger why. Change for its own sake isn't really sustainable. But if you can kind of go, you know what, this is why we exist. This is our purpose. This is what we're here for. And by evolving, you can realize that purpose in an even better way in a changing world. Some food for thought. I hope that's useful for you. Certainly inspiring for me. Just even writing this down, turning into a little case study has been useful. And I hope that you can take some insights, some wisdom, some practical ideas and apply them in your own world of change. I'm Digby Scott. This is Dig Deeper. And until next time, go well.